You're listening to title music from Adidas Championship Football, released in 1990, composed by Matthew Cannon. What's up, BG Maniacs? Welcome to another episode of BG Mania, a video game music podcast. I, of course, am your host, Brian, and joining me on the show this week, he is the host of Very Good Music, a VGM podcast monthly. It's Bedroth. Welcome back to the show, Bedroth.
Thanks very much for having me, man. Excited to be back.
It is still monthly, right? Nothing's changed since last
week. Yeah, that's still the plan. Monthly and maybe a surprise second episode for the month if I have time. we may while we were recording our most recent episode, Chukapow reminded me that we're coming up on our 2-year anniversary at the end of February, so I may put something together for that. I don't know, it's, you know,
sounds like it might be time for a 2-year anniversary. I don't know, we did one.
I remember we did one. I think later this year we're gonna hit our 100th episode, so I think I might
save up
for that one.
That's a good one too. Real quick, if you'd be so kind, head on over to Apple Podcast or whatever app that you've chosen to listen to us on and drop us a quick rating or interview on there, if you'd be so kind. I already said that, but Bedroth, I will say as we sit down to do this episode, I smoked a lot before we hit record, so I may repeat myself a few times here, and apologies about that, but it does help us out in terms of our visibility and search results so that BG Mania continues to grow, and thank you all so much for the warm reception back with Persona 5 Strikers 2 weeks ago. The numbers were really strong for that episode, for the debut after a little bit of a brief hiatus, so I was pleased to see that, and I saw people talking about the episode, and it was nice, so...
Yeah, it was really nice to see.
Yeah, that was a fun one. That was a good episode. I enjoyed putting that one together. Also, remember, we are on Patreon now, patreon.com/RPG era. You can head on over there, check out our tiers, see what we're doing, and if you feel inclined, you can toss us a couple dollars each month. It really does go a long way. But if not, just listening, that's awesome too. It really is.
Special thanks to your podcaster.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And special thanks to current executive producers, Zenku and Jexx. Those are two still executive. We did have Seb for a bit, and then we hired him. Then he'd stopped.
Yep.
Because we're supposed to pay him at this point. Yeah, we're supposed to pay him at this point. And that's never going to happen. He knows that.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that check that you said was in the mail, but, you know, I decided to stop bugging you about it.
All I do is false promises, man. That's all I'm full of.
False promises and weed smoke. There you go.
That's pretty much it, man. Every time I exhale, it feels like smoke comes out of my lungs at this point. Can't even breathe normally anymore.
Well, you know, some of the songs that we're listening to tonight might not
I know.
Might Yeah, it might not hurt to have a little tokage beforehand.
I know. I came prepared.
Different flavor, prepared, for sure.
Absolutely. And I'm really excited to do today's episode with you, Bedroth. We are focusing on music of the ZX Spectrum, which is coming up on its 40th anniversary in roughly 2 months.
Yeah, like April 23rd.
A little over 2 months, yeah.
That's right, yeah. Or the ZX Spectrum, as Seth would probably call it.
Yes. I was going to say, this is a primarily European British console there for a majority of its lifespan. You know, the US did get a version in 83, and we did have several versions after that, but it was much more popular over there than it was here, for sure.
Yeah, and like a lot of early consoles, this one, the Commodore, the PC-88, it was marketed more as a computer and less as like a gaming device or console. I think that terminology started to get more popular with the NES, and then especially when the Genesis and the SNES came onto the market. That's when I think we start seeing them referred to as consoles. But essentially, that's what they were. They were gaming machines, and first and foremost, and anything else that they did was kind of secondary by this time, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So our introduction to the ZX Spectrum on today's episode was your first track that you prepared for us, and what was that?
That was the title theme to the Spectrum version of Adidas Championship Football, which was composed by Matthew Cannon.
Such a good track, man.
Yeah, it was nice and bouncy, upbeat, and just a really positive way, I think, to come into the show. And this was not early Spectrum music. The Spectrum, I think, had a pretty long lifespan.
Yes, like 10, 11 years, something like that.
And this was near the early middle part of that. This is from 1990. And,
okay, I think it was discontinued in 92.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Okay, yeah, that's right. 92, it was early.
92.
So this was near the end of its run. But Cannon had just gotten his first job at Ocean a couple of years before. And if VGMPF.com, the Video Game Music Preservation Foundation, if their info is correct, he was 17 when this game came out. So,
just so crazy, man.
Yeah.
So crazy. Still in high school. Like, mm-hmm. That is nuts. That is absolutely nuts. And it's so good, like, you know, for video game music back then on the Spectrum, which isn't like a super impressive piece of hardware when it comes to what it was capable of in terms of like graphics and music, but you see the technique and the skill of the composers and you get special stuff like this.
That's there's not a whole lot else that I see that the Cannon composed. He did work on the Game Boy, the NES, and the SNES, but I think most of his stuff was PAL exclusive. I see Bart and the Beanstalk for the Game Boy. I see Parasol Stars, which I think is the third Bubble Bobble game. Got Bubble Bobble, you got Rainbow Islands, and you got Parasol Stars for the NES, which did not come out in the States. And then he says that he wrote the title music for Ken Griffey Jr. Presents Major League Baseball for the SNES, which a lot of people know that soundtrack as a Tim and Jeff Fallon joint. Didn't do a whole lot, and he left gaming in 96 to focus on his own musical studies, so that's where we kind of lose track of him. But I'm glad he left us this, because like you said, this was a really, really cool track playing on.
Yeah, really fun, really bouncy, and as you mentioned, a good way to kick off the episode, specifically because it is also football, since it was a British system anyway.
Nice.
So I was looking at the sound chip that was in the ZX Spectrum, the AY38910 sound chip. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see the other like cabinets and games that used the same sound chip around that time that it was in for the Spectrum. So that was the same one that Dragon Slayer used in arcades as well.
Oh, cool.
And Bomb Jack too. Actually, there were several.
So that would have been, gotcha. Okay, yeah. And I think that I saw some comparison. I reached out to a couple of my podcasting friends from across the pond, Michael Bridgewater of Forever Sound Version and Lee Tyrrell of The Sound Test, to ask them about their experience with the Speccy, as they call it. And Michael is more well-known in the Commodore 64 demo scene, which famously has the SID chip. And he says, and I think from what I saw online in my limited research, the popular opinion is that the SID chip was superior to the AY, but this one, as you were saying, still definitely got around, and it was no slouch in the music department.
Yeah, it was impressive to see that it was used in so many different things. It was actually used in the Atari ST as well.
And if I'm looking at it right, I think all but two of our tracks were composed with the AY chip in mind.
Yes, I believe so.
And
I
not noticed just that as the, well. Not just the beeper, which was on the very, very first version of the Spectrum. The AY actually was added to it on an upgrade to 128K, sort of the second version of the Spectrum. The Spectrum OLED, if you will.
And it's definitely better sounding, which I think is, yes. is why we focused on it so much.
Right, definitely so.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, man. Well, we will be chatting about the Speccy all throughout the episode. But let's go ahead and jump to another block of music here. So we're going to kick things off since you opened the show. We're going to start with a block of three that I chose. So we've got three coming up. We'll listen to these. Bedroth and I will be right back right after that. You're listening to Title and In-Game Music from Cybernoid, released in 1987, composed by J. Dave Rogers. You're listening to Prince of the Yolkfolk from Dizzy, released June 1987, composed by Alistair Brimble. We'll be right back. You're listening to title music from Thundercats, released October 1987, composed by Rob Hubbard. Again, we are talking about the title and in-game music from Cybernoid. This actually released sometime in 1987. That's all I was able to find on this one. Cybernoid the Fighting Machine, I guess, is the full name of this game. This is actually composed by J. Dave Rogers. And you know what? I love the sound of this particular track. It is freaking cool, man.
Yeah, it really was. A lot of fun. Nice and, just I really like the panning on this one, I think. The use of the stereo. And this was when the Spectrum added the extra sound hardware that came with the 128 upgrade, I think it also added a headphone jack. Before that, all the music came out of the machine itself on a little piece of hardware that they called the beeper, which we'll get into in a minute. But yeah, this was really cool.
So J. Dave Rogers, I had to look him up a little bit because that is not a name that I am familiar with when I was, you know, picking things out here for this episode. And particular software credited in for the Spectrum alone. He's on there 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 15, 16 games on just the Spectrum. Stormlord. I know I came across that one when doing some research. I don't think we have a Stormlord track on the episode today.
I don't think so, but I know
I remember listening to it.
Yep.
Yeah, I definitely listened. Also, Netherworld. That one I remember coming across as well. So I did listen to several of his compositions, and they were all good. I also did Cybernoid 2, The Revenge. So he did the sequel to Cybernoid.
Okay.
Good for him.
Okay. Yeah, man, there were so many games for this machine, and
there were. I mean, again, it had a 10-year life cycle,
right?
Which was kind of unheard of then.
And a lot of these composers stayed around for quite a few. I think there are several big names among Spectrum composers, but I think
we're about to talk about one. Yeah,
I think a lot of those it's because they branched out into other systems as well. But then for every one of those, you probably have five or six of these, like the composer for this one,
who I will not remember after this episode. I'm sorry, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, and Matthew Cannon from our play-in track, same thing. It's like that's pretty much all they did, and so
you know what? I'm not gonna remember him either. I was gonna say maybe I would remember him because of Cannon and D, but it's not gonna happen. It's not gonna happen. But speaking about the big names, we do jump to the middle track there in that episode, or block. This is the entire episode. Prince of the Yolkfolk from Dizzy. This was done by Alistair Brimble. It released in June 1987. Alistair Brimble, I think, one of the big names for the ZX Spectrum, for sure.
Yeah, for the Spectrum, and I've seen him, I know, on some other stuff as well.
Absolutely. I mean, dude, he's credited still recently. Like, he just did work for Overload back in 2018. Like, he's still out there. Cartoon Network Battle Crashers in 2016 for PS4, Xbox One, 3DS, and Switch.
Did not know that he was still so active. That's cool.
He's still out there. Yeah, he has it. Well, he seems to take a year or two in between releases. He did the Driver Syndicate in 2020. That was his last credit.
Okay.
But yeah, he's still out there, man. Still going strong. And been going strong since 1987.
Yeah, and we're going to hear from him, I think, a couple more times, and definitely something special for our playout that we'll talk about him.
Absolutely, man. I'm so excited about that playout track.
I am.
Technically cheating a little bit, but man, I had to.
That's okay.
I had to. And it's one of my picks, so yep. I had to. Absolutely had to.
This game looks interesting. You mentioned that you had never played anything on the Spectrum. I have not either. I'm
really not familiar with anything on the Spectrum in terms of gameplay. Obviously, I've done some research. I've seen games on it, whether YouTube or YouTube. I don't think I've ever seen anyone play the Spectrum on Twitch.
I don't think it had a lot of market share here in the States. I think that really the only computer-ish type system that did was the Atari. And the Commodore 64 a little bit, and the Amiga, but the Atari was really probably the closest thing. When you think of something that could be on the Spectrum, think about like the Atari 2600.
My elementary school had an Atari.
Yeah, and so the stuff that you would play in computer lab in elementary school, if you grew up around the same time that me and Brian did, then yeah, that's kind of Spectrum level stuff. And
we had the Atari and the early Apple in that computer lab.
Yep, that's right. Oregon Trail, that kind of thing. Yeah, this it looks really interesting.
Lemmings as well.
Yep, for sure. Dizzy, it looks like, is an anthropomorphic egg who is apparently the prince of the Yolk folk. And that's about all I know.
And you mentioned while listening to it, and obviously easy to pick up on, but I love the the medieval kind of bounciness to it that it has as well.
Yeah, the melody here is really good. Brimble is really great at those. Like, I think his music is the happiest sounding on the Spectrum. I've actually got something by him coming up soon as well. So, and it's got that same sort of flavor to it.
I'm excited to talk about that and get to it. And what's nice is I don't think for this episode, because we kind of narrowed things down the day we're recording it, actually. I've not listened to all of yours yet, and you've not listened to all of mine yet.
That's right.
And that was a particular pleasure for you as we moved to the last track there in my block, the title yes. music from Thundercats. You had not got to hear that before.
I had not, and man, it was good.
Yeah, it was amazing. Released in October 1987, composed by Rob Hubbard. And man, I think this might be my favorite track that I submitted for this episode today. This is incredible. This is something special.
And Rob Hubbard, another big name. I don't know how active he is anymore, but a lot of these guys, Rob Hubbard and we'll hear about later, Alberto Gonzalez, were really big on the Game Boy. Man. And yeah. Jonathan Dunn as well, another big name in the Spectrum scene. And a lot of this music sounds similar to me to music from the Game Boy that I really got familiar with because of guys like Gonzalez. And it definitely has that Western flair to it. All these composers, of course, are British or European. And so you have a really different flavor than you would have had on something like the PC-88, which was a Japanese computer. So, you know, it had that sort of similar sound that you would get in the early NES music. And I really like it. I like this kind of stuff. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So I looked, Rob Hubbard, not really that active anymore. He did do something for the 2014 documentary From Bedrooms to Billions. By British filmmakers Anthony and Nicola Caulfield that, mm-hmm. you know, talks about the British video game industry from 1979 to present day. So he was involved with that.
Yeah, I talked about that back on my episode about Ben Daglish with Lee.
Nice.
He was also involved on Bedrooms to Billions. And he and Hubbard worked together a lot. So Hubbard came up a couple times on that episode.
Really cool. Really cool.
It's funny. Lee interviewed both Hubbard and Daglish on the sound test several years ago. And he said that Hubbard complained on his show and also on other ones he listened to prepare for it. Pretty much any chance he got said that the Spectrum was just not fun to work with. He did not enjoy working on this machine. But
did he give any specifics as to why?
He didn't. He just I think if you look up any Rob Hubbard interviews, Lee just said that he absolutely hated it and always disses it in his interviews. So I mean, go check out the one with the sound test on the sound test that Lee interviewed him with, and I know it's going to come up there. I don't know. I know that even Tim Fallon, when he worked on it, I mean, this is normal for Tim Fallon, but he actually developed additional sound hardware, like proprietary sound hardware, so that he could make the music sound the way he wanted to and not just be stuck with what the Spectrum had. So maybe it
which
had
does
to do
not
with the
surprise me. Which
yeah.
does not surprise me.
Right. I think it was also Hubbard was used to working on the C64, which, again, the SID chip is apparently really easy to work with and capable of more. And so, maybe that's what it was, that it just wasn't as easy to work with and couldn't do as much. But I tell you, man, he really makes it sing on this one, though.
Abso-freaking-lutely, man. And I am so interested in this particular game. You know, I did watch gameplay of it after listening to that track. It doesn't look that amazing, but I was a Thundercats fan. Like, I liked the show. Yeah.
It was right in our wheelhouse.
Absolutely, it was. Right around that time. The first one ran 85 to 89, so mm-hmm. I was born in 86. You obviously a little bit older than I am.
A little bit, but, yeah.
So you probably remember it distinctly, but I didn't catch it until it was reruns only, but it was still a freaking show that I absolutely loved. So coming across this track, I was glad that it was so good because I wanted to include it. If it would have sucked, then I would have been like a Frank pick, but you know, I didn't want to have to do that.
No Rugrats stuff going on here. This was truly a cool piece of music, and so long, and it doesn't loop. It just
4 minutes and 20 seconds, almost the perfect number. 4:20, the perfect number almost. It was 4 minutes and 19 seconds, one second off, and no loops. It's incredible, absolutely incredible for that time period. It's so cool, so freaking cool.
Yeah. Very, very cool.
Okay, but let's jump to another block of tracks here. We have three coming up that you submitted. I'm excited to listen to these fully here, so let's do that. And then you and I will be back to talk about art. Wow, I can't talk. You and I will be right back to talk about the tracks as long as I can speak right after this. You're listening to Title Music from Grell and Fella, released 1992. composed by Alistair Brimble. You're listening to title music from Beyond the Ice Palace, released in 1988, composed by David Whittaker. We'll be right back. You're listening to title music from Kronos, released in 1987, composed by Tim Fallon.
Welcome back, everyone. That was another trio of classic Spectrum tunes. First of all, another Bremble tune. We'll talk about Rel and Fella,
like that.
Title music.
Like that, man. As talked about, he is probably, as you mentioned, like the happiest sounding composer for Spectrum music, and you really get that here.
Yeah.
And I love the artwork of this particular game. Is this
it
like
looks
a fairy?
Really fun.
Yeah, this
yeah,
is like a fairy,
like a fairy and some
thing.
Goblins or something. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Another kind of fantasy aesthetic.
Berries, maybe? I don't know if they're eating berries or not, but one's got a fork.
Yep. I don't know, though. It just looks like a fun, happy little tune. And now that you're talking about them eating berries, reminds me a little of the gummy bears on Disney way back in the day.
Oh, okay. It looks like a side-scrolling... platforming-ish type of game, potentially? Yeah, 2D side-scrolling platformer. Yeah, definitely. Okay.
And you said
I'm looking at screenshots here. Yeah, this was a 1992 release, so this was the final year of the Spectrum here.
Gotcha.
So it's definitely a lot more colorful than some of the early stuff we saw, and I think Alistair Brimble had, by this point, mastered what he could do on the Spectrum, so this is a good track to showcase some of that later stuff of the Spectrum.
Yeah, that kind of thing is really cool. When I did my focuses on composers last fall, hearing them like at the beginning of a console and then the end of a console was really, really kind of cool. We move from this to another just giant in the Spectrum scene who we actually only have one track from, but David Whittaker.
And what a track, though, man. This might be one of my favorite tracks on the episode. It's up there with my Thundercats pick for sure now.
It's so good. And again, like the Hubbard track, the Thundercats track, it goes on for so long, but it just keeps changing and adding and building. Beyond the Ice Palace, title music. and you get that icy feel, and it just the ability to manipulate volume on the spectrum was not easy. And so the fact that he was able to like fade out and go up and down was really, really cool. The way that Lee put it, even with the AY chip added in, he says that the spectrum was really kind of one or two steps away from a birthday card that plays a jingle when you open it. basically, so the Spectrum 128, it was the AI 38910, as you said earlier. It was all simple waveforms, no samples. So, like the SNES was a sample based system. The NES was waveform based. It had like the two square wave channels, the one triangle wave, and then the noise channel. The Spectrum was similar to that, but even more primitive. The SID chip was actually above, like more a little more advanced than the NES sound hardware. And the NES, I feel like, is kind of sandwiched in between, but a little bit of a different animal. The reason the SID chip and the Commodore 64 was considered better is because it had more waveforms available. It had a higher number of them and better ways to combine them, and it had built-in filters that you could apply to them to change the sound. Which is a lot of what, as we'll talk about in a second, composers like Tim Fallon, when the filters weren't built into the hardware, a lot of composers just kind of added them on. So, and volume was not something that was easy to manipulate on any of the waveform-based consoles, from what I understand. But the filters on the SID chip, one of the filters you could add was one that could help you manipulate dynamics.
See, and this is the beautiful thing, and why everybody should be writing in and thanking me for putting you on the show in Frank's place, because never before would anybody else in my place have ever been able to do that. No way. Frank would have never brought that kind of information to an episode. Sorry, Frank, I know you're listening. That's not a Frank tidbit or a Tank tidbit or a liner note any there. You wouldn't have got that from him.
Well, and there are things that Frank brought that I could never bring, but I do.
Yeah, because it's all stupid shit.
I've got a nice little mixed bag of experience.
It's what he specializes in. It's perfect.
I can put enough of it together to sound kind of smart. No, a lot of this really comes from, I got to give another shout out to Lee Tyrrell of the Sound Test, and of a lot of different things. He plays bass in a band. He's a writer. He's got a lot of stuff going on.
He was supposed to be on an episode of the show. And I let that fall through. Might still happen in the future. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, definitely reach out. Lee still loves BGM. I think he's got a little bit burnt out on it after a while. He had some things happen kind of back to back, but he's really leaning into his writing at the moment. But he did take some time out of his schedule to talk to me about this and give me enough info to make me sound smart. So, especially when it comes to this next tune.
Which, what a different sounding piece of music, and you'll tell us why.
Yes. So, Tim Fallon is a legend in video game music. I don't have to sell how amazing Tim Fallon is.
No, we've played a crap ton of his music on the show before. Yeah, he's amazing.
And so I felt comfortable showcasing a piece of Fallon's that was technologically inferior to everything else on the playlist, because I knew that he would still make it sound as good as he could. This next one was the title music from Chronos, 1987 title from the Radial Tubes, or that was the developer. The publisher was Insight Studios. Talk about that again in a second. Okay. And Chronos is, I don't know anything about the game itself at all, but this was from the ZX Spectrum before it had the advancement with the AY chip. So this is just the beeper. This is actually, it's not even a speaker. It's just a piece of hardware that can emit different types of chirps on the system itself. It's one channel. So like, again, the NES had three sound channels and then a noise channel. The beeper was one channel that could play up to, where is it? I've got my notes here. One channel with 10 octaves. So, of course, anybody who has a piano, an octave is a set of eight notes. and so it could play up to 10 octaves, so a little more than your average piano, but one channel, so one sound at a time on the basic hardware. But, and I don't know the details, I don't think anybody really does, because it was a long time ago and it's proprietary, but Fallon developed, so his big brother, Mike, I keep calling him Mark, Mike Fallon. The Fallons are a musical family. Of course, Tim and Jeff composed a lot of stuff together. Mike, their big brother, was the one who first got a job at Insight and got them into game development and sound development. And this was, so he got them to Tim the job at Insight, and this was one of his first games, Chronos. And Tim Fallon was 15 when he composed this.
Which is mind-blowing.
It is. It's mind-blowing. Not only that, he composed it, I mean,
we were talking about 17 years earlier, and right. Now we're down to 15. If we get down to 13 later, something's wrong, Bedroth. Something's
right.
wrong.
Right, yeah. And he developed some kind of hardware that would enable him to apply filters to this music so that he could play more than just one thing at a time and could add on noise like that static that he is somehow able to manipulate into something that sounds like percussion while he still has something that sounds like a melody going on. I really like the way that Lee put it in our chat. He says, it sounds gnarly as hell, but it's part of the appeal. It does.
It sounds very raw. It does. Yeah. It sounds very raw.
It really is something approaching witchcraft, what he was able to do. I mean, everybody has heard the Silver Surfer tune from the NES and the Pictionary theme from the Incredible. NES. This is like that level of, I don't know how he did it on this console, because you should not be able to make it sound like this. And Fallon had some fantastic stuff on the Spectrum, like really, really, really great stuff. But I wanted to showcase this weird instrument and also showcase what Fallon was able to do with it. It's really cool.
Absolutely. Really cool. Chronos looks like it is a shmup almost, a side-scrolling shooter. You're in control of a spacecraft and you're just like firing bullets at stuff as it comes on the screen. Looks kind of fun, actually.
Okay, cool. I can hear that.
This would have been a game I would have played. Yeah, this would have been a game I would have played for sure. Very cool. Very cool. No in-game music. It's all just, you know, the bullets and mock explosions, I guess. But
okay, so this would have been just the title music then.
Yeah, this is just the title music. Yeah, there's nothing in-game here. Yep. Cool. Very cool. And that is the only track we're going to have that's like that today. I think everything else, we're going back to the 128, which had the better sounding stuff. So really cool. Well, I don't know. Do you have another one in your next block?
Or are they all 128 as well? Everything is with the AY chip. So it's from the 128 upgrade.
Perfect. Yeah. So all mine are as well. Okay. Very cool. Very cool. Well, that was a nice little break and a nice little perfect, halfway point to the episode to talk about that. But let's go ahead and jump to another block of three. I'm excited to get to this block. I have some fun ones in this one. These are my next three. We'll talk about these after we listen to them. Enjoy. We'll be right back. You're listening to Title Music from Wrestling Superstars, released in 1992, composed by Gerard Gourley. The top
This is Kyle, and one day you can be too. Every Friday, I host what is soon to be your favorite podcast, The Media Files. Me and one of my best friends talk about pop culture happening so that you don't look like an uncultured swine during those boring water cooler conversations. Laughs are shared, tears are cried, and sometimes we have really interesting special guests that you might be familiar with. Download The Media Files wherever you download podcasts, and remember, be kind, be honest, and we'll see you later.
You're listening to title music from The Real Ghostbusters, released in 1989, composed by John May or John White. You're listening to title music from Nemesis the Warlock, released in 1987, composed by Rob Hubbard.
Thank you.
coming back in. We are talking about the title music. I think everything is theoretically title music today from wrestling superstars. Had to get a wrestling track in on here to show some love to the industry and also give a plug to Blood and Destroyers and all the wrestling podcasts that uploads every Monday. You should go check it out if you're a fan of AEW or wrestling. Absolutely. Myself and Sev, who guest starred on this week's Max Level podcast. Go check that out as well. How about that? Two plugs in one. How about that?
My aunt last year got my dad into WWE. Dad's never really been a big wrestling fan, but she got him into it. And
wrong promotion.
Last week while I was down, I said, so if you want another night of wrestling at the house, you know, you've got TBS. You should check out AEW Dynamite on Wednesdays.
Yes.
So I think I'm going to get him into it. We'll see.
Oh, it's so much better. He'll never go back to WWE after he checks one episode of Dynamite out. It's so much better. But wrestling superstars here, not really a good game from the quick research that I did on this after finding this particular track in game. I was glad to find it because I did like the track, right? It's a fun track. It's super kind of happy and fun. I guess fun is just the best way to describe it. By a composer that, again, we've not mentioned before on the show and likely never will again, Gerard Gourley. Did have a decent amount of credits that I was able to find, but nothing that really stuck out to me that probably we would ever play. Like, it's a bunch of unknown games and smaller titles like Wrestling Superstars, which tried to give off the image that you could play as Hulk Hogan in the game, but it was a poor representation, and they got lawsuits and, you know, sued over it, and it was a disaster. Unfortunate. Poor Codemasters.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the track is pretty cool.
Good though.
Nice, solid, decent track. Fun. Yeah,
nice melody. I like it a lot. It's fun. Unfortunately, the game was not though. That happens sometimes. That happens. Happens a lot actually, but is what it is. I also was pleased to find the middle track in that block, the title music from The Real Ghostbusters, which released in 1989. And, you know, Bedroth and I did some extensive research, and apparently people have been doing research for a very long time, trying to figure out who actually did the music for The Real Ghostbusters. But unfortunately, that information has been theoretically lost to time. We do have two names, two guys responsible for the programming and the development of the game, John May and John White. One of them may have been responsible for just doing the sound coding here, because as you mentioned while we were listening to it, it theoretically is just the Ray Parker Jr. theme, but there is a bit of originality kind of in the middle as well.
Yeah, it's a really cool adaptation, and I don't remember where I've heard it before, and I don't even know if it was this version, but there was a podcast a while back that played like different versions of the same tunes on different systems, and of course on any Ghostbusters game you're going to hear this, and that would be interesting to hear like how all the different systems adapted it. But whoever did this one did a pretty cool job. I liked it.
Yeah, for Spectrum, really, for 1989, when we really didn't, and I don't know how this game played. Again, we have no familiarity with really any of the games, but
from what little of what I read, it played better than just
I was gonna say the NES version sucked. I mean, that was awful. So anything was better than that, at least I would assume so. But we really got this cool sounding version of the main theme to Ghostbusters, and I dug it a lot. I thought this was really cool, but not as cool as my last track in that block. We're going back to Rob Hubbard. We're going back to something lengthy. We got 4.5 minutes almost of the title music from Nemesis the Warlock. This released in 1987. And man, Rob Hubbard just kills it. He just freaking kills it. This is so cool, dark, eerie. I love it, man. It's so cool sounding.
Yeah, this really cool. It starts out kind of like the first part of that Ice Palace theme I played by David Whittaker.
A little bit.
The darkness, but it really just it definitely has its own sound. And Hubbard again, just on this system that he apparently didn't like very much, really, really making that sound chip sing.
He understood it at least. He hated
it. He did,
but he understood it.
He knew how to make it do what he wanted it to do. So
absolutely. And the game looks kind of rough. I did look up a long play of this one when I was doing my research. Graphically, it doesn't look that impressive. And then gameplay wise, it's not super amazing as well. May have been fun back in the day, right? Because, you know, limitations and all, and comparing it to stuff now is not fair. But
yeah. I mean, when we were looking at, it's interesting you say that, actually, we'll talk about that next, but looking at when we were listening to all this music for the episode, on so many of the YouTube comments for all the ones I listened to, so many people were saying, yeah, the music was really the best part. The game is garbage.
Right. And so, I mean, looking back, like, you know, people from our generation that would have played these games for the first time when they were relevant probably didn't think they sucked.
They probably
thought they were the most amazing freaking thing in the world because they had never seen anything like this before.
Yeah.
Now we've been spoiled.
Like, Ski Free and with the Crazy Yeti and stuff like Number Munchers on the Apple computers. I mean, you know, those were not groundbreaking games, but at the time they blew our minds.
Absolutely,
like you said,
they did. Yeah. So, you know, it is tough. It's tough for people that didn't grow up playing these games to go back and play them. Like, that's actually why I tend not to go back and play older games that often, because we do get spoiled by the modern stuff.
Yep.
And unless it's a true classic that, like, Link to the Past or something that I know I can go back and play to without any issues, going back and playing something older, most of the time it just doesn't appeal to me. So I don't do it that often. It's very rare. Very rare. But I love this track. I absolutely do. And it doesn't loop, again, as we talk about with some of these. It's so impressive that you get this lengthy 4-plus minute track on something like the ZX Spectrum that is all originality, no looping of anything like that. And we played a decent amount that had that, too. Like, there were some that looped, but we played a decent amount that didn't.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
Most notably, the Hubbard tunes and that David Whitaker tune, the really long ones. And yep. If I'm not mistaken, I think that at least one in my next block is gonna have that as well.
Ooh, well, I'm excited. So since you teased it, we may as well jump to it. Let's go ahead and get to that final block on today's episode, where we've been kind of celebrating and looking at the music of the ZX Spectrum as it approaches its 40th anniversary, which is just mind-blowing in general that, you know, we're starting to approach 40th anniversary for things that we grew up with.
Yep.
That really does suck.
Yeah. I mean, let's not get too ahead of ourselves. I still haven't celebrated my 40th anniversary yet, so.
Not yet.
This is older than us, but you know what? We're getting there. It's going to be later this year.
We're getting there.
So.
We're freaking getting there, man. It's unfortunate. But yeah, you've got three tracks here. I am excited to listen to these. Let's check these out, and we'll be back to close this episode out right after doing so. You're listening to Desert from Socaban Perfect, unreleased in 1991, composed by Alberto Jose Gonzalez. you're listening to title music from Mystical, released in 1991, composed by Alberto Jose Gonzalez. You're listening to Menu and Intro Music from The Sword of Iana, released on September 30th, 2017, composed by Alberto Jose Gonzalez.
Okay, and that was my trifecta of tracks by Alberto Jose Gonzalez, also sometimes
a mini composer appreciation block there.
Yep. Gonzalez is also sometimes credited as Joe McAlby, and he has been in the video game music scene for many, many years. I believe he got started in 1988, somewhere around that time. And when he got started, again, he was 16. He's only 49 years old. He was born in 72. He's 10 years older than I am. So he got started in 88 on the Spectrum. This was one of his first, or this was his first system to officially compose for. It was the Spectrum was apparently, looking at his biography here, was the, there's a music software application on the ZX Spectrum that was titled Wham! The Music Box. Don't know if it's connected to the band or not.
But I was going to say, like, wake me up before you go-go type of a thing?
That was lent to him by a friend, and he had a good ear for melody, but has never had any formal music training. But he started to write his own music, and then reached out to a couple of different designers and developers, and got started with Bit Managers. Got started apparently as kind of an independent agent doing different stuff for different folks in 1988. New Frontier, small Spanish developer, New Frontier was his first. And that is actually the developer of the games we're going to be talking about first. That first track was the desert theme from Sokoban Perfect, one of the first games we've talked about that actually has multiple tracks.
Which is amazing. Yeah, there's like 10 or so.
Yeah, and this track was really cool. I like the way it kind of opened up with that, what I first thought was ocean waves, but then what I guess is supposed to be like maybe the sound of sand blowing in the wind. Mm-hmm. Really cool track with some darkness at the beginning. And this was never released. It was developed for the Spectrum, the Amstrad CPC, and the Amiga, and Gonzalez did the music for all of them, but this was, it was not actually released.
It would have come out in 1991, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Should have come out in 91.
And
the next game, it didn't come out.
It is. I don't know. Did you see if there was any like gameplay footage or anything? Do you know if it ever got that far?
I tried looking it up, and I saw that it was recovered, but all I found were screenshots.
Okay.
I mean, it looks interesting, but I'm curious as to why the project was abandoned when, I mean, clearly so much work was done on it. It's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that might merit some digging into. Fortunately, Gonzalez has always been forthright about his work and, you know, open to releasing it, letting people listen to it. So we do still have this full soundtrack, at least.
Which is awesome, yes.
The next game, Mystical, came out in 91, and it did actually release, and got a cool sort of Middle Eastern kind of vibe to it. But still that bouncy sort of Gonzalez, you know, flair that you're used to on a lot of his Game Boy and Game Boy Color soundtracks, where I think he really shines. But if you listen to some of that stuff, you definitely hear, now that you hear some of the stuff he does on the Spectrum, you hear how much his early work on this system affected all of his later work.
What Mystical kind of reminds me of most, because there are, like, looking at the artwork for the game, you know, it's a character holding what appears to be a flare of some sort surrounding by these barrels.
Yeah.
When you watch the game, you're playing a character that kind of resembles, like, Uncle Fester from the Adams Family and Fester's Quest. And he's got a gun, and he's shooting like 3 to 5 bullets, depending on if you get power-ups or whatever. And that's the shmup aspect of this game. It's literally the game just comes at you, and you just keep firing these bullets. But I don't know, interesting artwork, because it's got like the upside-down pentagrams and stuff on the ground as you go. And I mean, there might be some like demonic ties here. I'm not quite sure. Maybe that's why it sounds a bit darker.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe so. And you talk about how that reminded you. That reminds me that we both heard in that Sokoban Perfect tune a lot of similarities to early Kirby music.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we didn't mention that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so that was really cool, because Kirby's Adventure didn't come out for quite a few years after this, so it's cool that Gonzalez already had kind of that sound going. And you mentioned, I think, when it started that it sounded a little more Japanese, and
it did.
I think, was in the right age group to be influenced by some of the early stuff like Falcom and Yuzo Koshiro specifically. I know he's a fan of Koshiro's. They talk a lot on Twitter, as you know. And he also cites several of the composers we've mentioned, Ben Daglish, Tim Follin, Jonathan Dunn, and David Whittaker as musical influences, along with Chris Hulsbeck, who I don't know if he did any Spectrum work, but I know he was involved in like the Commodore 64 scene and things
and
like
we've
that.
We've played a decent amount of his stuff on the show before.
We've talked
about him often.
Yeah. He's another big name in the scene. So Gonzalez was inspired by a lot of the same folks that we're fans of, and so it's really cool.
Absolutely.
And the last track is possibly the coolest find of all. I didn't even realize it until I was doing research on them as we went. The game is called The Sword of Iana, and this was the, I think it was just a title music or a menu and intro music from The Sword of Iana. And the track itself, it was nice. I would definitely encourage anybody to check out the full soundtrack, which you can find on his SoundCloud, McAlby_ZX. And I'm going to mention here, this game came out in 2017, which not only is just cool that it's a new Spectrum game from 5 years ago. I think
was this
is also
Kickstarter project by chance.
His, I don't know. I don't know if it was Kickstarted.
Curious. I'm gonna look now. I'm gonna check that out.
Yeah, take a look. This came out on September 30th of 2017. It was developed specifically for the Spectrum and the MSX2. Despite being released so late, and they reached out to Gonzalez, and he says that he said this was his first ZX Spectrum soundtrack since 90. It was actually 91, and that he thought the last one was Mystical. It looks like Mystical came out around the same time as another game called North and South. But yeah, around that same time. So it was his first in, that would be what, like 14? 24. 24 years.
About 24,
wow.
Yeah. 24.
And
this was not a Kickstarter game.
He says it wasn't easy to come up with the soundtrack after so long, considering the style, which is very different from what he used to do, because, you know, he had been composing for so long. But in the end, he said he was quite happy with the results and thinks that it fits the game very well. He mentions that the game is free, and I sent you a link to that. So anybody can download and check out the game if you're interested.
Super cool that they developed it using like the actual limitations and hardware and everything. That's why I was wondering if it was a Kickstarter project, because oftentimes, you know, you'll see those types of things go on there for funding and they'll still release them on the actual old hardware. That does not appear to be the case here. That's really cool.
And in the demo scene, which the C64 has a huge demo scene, but Michael Bridgewater said that the Spectrum also has a pretty big demo scene following, especially in Russia. Look up a lot of the Spectrum demo scene work on YouTube, you'll see a lot of, you know, the Cirilla characters and stuff. But a lot of times for those demos, they'll do kind of like a game jam type thing where they'll get together and develop something rudimentary, have a composer come in with some music and a designer come in with some art, and then put together basically a demo. And I wonder if this started with something like that, but then they liked what they had so much that they just developed it into a full game, like in their free time, because that's what they like to do. I don't think it's that expensive to develop things for these systems since they're computer hardware and not proprietary like console hardware.
Right.
So I wonder if it was just, maybe that's why it didn't have to get kickstarted, that it just wasn't as expensive. And I don't know for sure, of course, and nobody could unless they asked him, but I wonder if Gonzalez even charged them for this or if he just had fun putting together some
music. I was going to say, how cool, though, for him to do that. I know, you know, it was probably a challenge going back to do that, as you mentioned, but cool that he did it just in general. Like, they reached out and he said yes. Like, that's the coolest thing.
Another interesting thing, he mentions here, he composed a very long soundtrack. This would have been Sokoban, but the game wasn't released. He doesn't say why, but he mentions that he composed that during military service in 1991. So that would have been around the time of the Gulf War. So maybe he was in the Spanish military around that time and still composing music.
Which is mind-blowing in general. That's so freaking cool, man.
I would love to do a deep dive on Gonzalez sometime. If it's not obvious, since I played three of his tracks on this episode, I love Gonzalez's work so much. And he's a really, really interesting character. So.
Well, he is on my list to do a deep dive at some point. So We will definitely get around to it eventually.
Yeah. Who knows?
You missed the Naoki Kodaka episode one. So
I did.
At least you'll be here for that one.
Yeah, maybe we'll actually get to reach out to him. He's kind of an elusive fellow when it comes to interviews. So
yeah,
kind of a golden goose, I guess. But yeah,
that'd be fun. Even just to sit down for like 5 or 10 minutes just to gush, that'd be fun. Especially for you.
Oh yeah, it would. Man, that would be so cool. I would geek out.
Oh man. Well, this is a fun episode. I'm glad we did this. I'm glad we actually spent time over the last 2 weeks. Like, I mean, you specifically, you had like 100 tracks in our shared playlist together.
It was like 50.
I don't know, man. I went in there one day and I was like, oh my God. And I just started scrolling through your list and I was like, man, this is some good stuff. And I didn't want to like have any overlaps. I was like, man, I got to find other things now.
Yeah. And I didn't even narrow that down. I think over the last few days at work while I was, just listening to, or didn't have anything to do, I just popped it on and listened through to the whole list and just kind of wrote down the ones I really liked, and that's how I narrowed it down. But when I was first looking, I actually looked up the track that you chose as the playout track. I looked up that album, and
really? Okay.
Because
okay,
Lee, okay. I think, actually recommended that I check it out because it would be a good source of some of the biggest tunes on the spectrum, because that was the guy who put together this collection. That was his goal, was to showcase some of the best stuff on the system. And so I went there first and found the original tracks from it. And that's kind of, that just led me down the rabbit hole. And I just kept adding stuff I heard that I liked the first few seconds of. And then they wrote it down. So it was fun. This was
a cool way to do it.
I really enjoy exploring sides of this scene that I don't really know as well. And this was the first time in a long time that I really got to dig into something I just had no idea about before. So thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely, man. And since you mentioned it, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the closeout track, because it is technically different. It is breaking two rules here. One, we have theoretically played this track before, but we've played a different version of it. But also, this isn't just ZX Spectrum music.
Yeah, this particular arrangement is not from a video game, so it's...
Right. It was composed initially by Jonathan Dunn, mm-hmm. which I'm glad we did get something on here by Jonathan Dunn. I do love Jonathan Dunn.
Absolutely.
His work is incredible. Obviously, the RoboCop track from the Game Boy version, which we have played before. I mean, still to this day, when I listen to it, I cry. Like, that track is so emotional.
It may be Dunn's most famous track, and the Game Boy version is the one that everybody knows, for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. But then you have this track here, which exists on the ZX Spectrum version of RoboCop, which by itself is incredible. And
it
I encourage you to go look up the original version without Alistair Brimble's rearrangement to it. I encourage you to go check it out because it's beautiful on its own.
I actually, after listening to it, to them back to back, I think this may be a hot take for some people. I think the Spectrum version is better than the Game Boy version. It's a little faster, but I think the sound is a little bit cleaner. So
it
maybe
is crisper.
It's just a...
It is crisper, yes.
Maybe it's just kind of like Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer and then Prayer 97, where it just like depends on which flavor you want.
Okay, but, okay. I like the analogy because I am a Bon Jovi fan, mm-hmm. and nobody else at RPG Era is.
I think Dan is
also a Bon Jovi fan. Yeah, Dan is also a Jovi fan. But Kyle and Frank hate Bon Jovi with a passion.
Well, nobody's perfect. But yeah,
this whole album,
it's so cool.
Specifically, you were talking to me about it, and I need to actually go listen to the full album. Alistair Brimble took the as you were talking about, the most famous and best tracks that were on the Spectrum, mm-hmm. and really highlighted them in a way that's never been done before. And in doing so, with this particular title music from RoboCop, he made something special, man. Like, especially when we get to the end of the track, and that's why this is the closeout, because it technically is different, and we have played it before. But when you get to the end, and I encourage you to stick around, listen to the full thing. It's just magical. But the last little bit, it is just chills, man. It is just perfect.
Yeah. I'm looking at it right now. It's called, so the album is called The Spectrum Works. And he has here Kronos by Tim Fallon, and Beyond the Ice Palace by David Whitaker. So we played both of those tonight, and both of those are on this album. But then other stuff, he's got stuff here by Rob Hubbard, a couple of other David Whitaker tracks, some other Tim Fallon tracks, and just another.
Did he remix any of his own?
It does not look like he did. It looks like he specifically covered other people's work. So
interesting.
So also kind of cool of him.
Yeah, I would have been interested to hear like him redo something from Dizzy by, you know what I mean? Like just,
yeah, I would
not necessarily
well.
What we, not necessarily what we played, but just taking what he had done and making it more modern as well. Mm-hmm. You know what? I'd be curious to hear somebody else do that too.
Yeah. Like Alberto Jose Gonzalez. You can look out there and find, sure you can look out there and find remixes and covers and stuff of Brimble's
work. Let's hear Jonathan Dunn remix something by Alistair Brimble. That'd be cool.
That would be really cool.
That'd be dope. That'd be freaking dope. What a fun episode. What a cool episode.
This was a lot of fun, man. And yeah, I can't think of a better way to close this out than this track. It's going to be something special. Stick around for the whole thing, everybody.
Absolutely. But unfortunately, I think that's going to bring us to the close of the show for this week. We do want to thank you for sticking with us and listening to another episode of BG Mania, made possible, of course, by RPGera.com. If you like video game music, and more importantly, you like us and you want to help grow the show, check the description box for ways you can do just that, including a link to our Patreon, where you can, again, help support us. There will also be links to our Discord server, where you can join our community. There'd be a lot of fun there. And, yeah, links to everything. There'll be links to very good music, a VGM podcast. That's on there.
Thank
I don't think I put
much.
One for the movie bar yet. I need to update the description. I need to put one for the movie bar now, too. That's got to be on there. We got to get that on there, too. Go check out the episode. That's available. There's another one coming up soonish, right?
Pretty soon, yeah. Going to be the end of February. I am going to be listening to a few good, or watching. So used to listening to stuff for podcasts. Going to be watching A Few Good Men here sometime this week, and then hoping to record with the Dyad next weekend. So we will see
looking
how that goes.
Looking forward to it. Looking forward to it. The first episode was great. Yeah, looking forward to
we'll
it.
We'll see if we can handle the truce.
Hopefully. Oh, but again, taking us out of this episode, we're going to be taking a listen to the title music from RoboCop, released in December of 1988. Again, originally composed by Jonathan Dunn, but this is a more modernly rearranged version by Alistair Brimble. Keep the music playing and keep it loud.